Up next on Grace Life Radio is Word for America.
God has His elect out there into the world. Now, we don't know who those elect are, which means we have to go into all of the world to find them.
Where we discuss today's theological topics.
Bow tie, see my bow tie, tie my bow tie.
Here, let me interpret.
Faster, faster,
do
faster.
Do you know what I just said?
Yeah, I believe what Dr. Luke said is welcome to Word for America.
And you are good.
I got a gift.
With host, Dr. Luke.
Most people say, well, we don't want no stinking doctrine. We just want Jesus.
Pastor Brandon.
Yeah, they use the Arminian highlighter, just the old Sharpie.
And our resident Barnabas, Matt Graham.
What you talking about, Free Willis?
Doctrinal issues.
The Word of God is clear that the gospel is the power of God unto salvation. To everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek, meaning that if anyone is ever going to be saved, it is going to be through the preaching of the gospel.
Yeah, we discuss those. Exposing false teaching.
Well, Joel, it says you're a sinner.
Yeah.
And that's something, that's a word that you refuse to use.
Chick. Keeping Dr. Luke on topic.
And you, everyone in this room, has potential.
All right, let's rein Dr. Luke back in.
We're working on it. So get ready for the fastest 28 minutes in radio. Take it away, Dr. Luke.
Lapsarianism. What does that even mean? Well, that will be the topic that we will discuss today on the Word for America program. I am Dr. Luke. You are listening to 90.1 FM WPGT, where we preach grace and truth. And this is the Word for America program, as always. With me, pastor, teacher, Brandon Ellickson, Grace Life Church, Lake City, and our resident Barnabas, Matthew Graham. Okay, men, we had talked about this last time we were together, and the idea of lapsarianism came up. Supra-lapsarianism, infra-lapsarianism, sub-lapsarianism, anti-lapsar. What on earth is lapsarianism, Pastor Brandon?
Well, it's taken from the Latin word lapsus, and the Latin word lapsus means to fall. Like whenever you have a lapse of judgment, what has happened right there is you have fallen asleep at the judgment wheel. And so this has to do with the fall and God's... is God reacting to a fall? Is God preemptively doing something prior to the fall? And so all of these different lapsarian views have to do with how God interacts with the fall of mankind.
Okay. So those of you listening may have absolutely no clue, may have never, and most likely have never even heard this terminology. And is it necessary? Probably not. But this is really kind of...
To quote the great theologian Nacho Libre, ease for fun.
Nacho Libre. All right. But basically, so even when you talk about lapsarianism, unless you're kind of in the Reformed camp, it's really probably never going to come up in discussion.
No, I mean, so you have sub-tiers of lapsarian views, but the two major lapsarian views are supralapsarian and infralapsarian. So really, this whole debate, while it is a highly contested debate, I think it's important at the beginning of the conversation to admit and get it out there that this is a debate amongst Calvinists. So if you are not a Calvinist, if you are not talking to a Calvinist, this idea of supralapsarianism or infralapsarianism, it's probably not going to come up in a conversation. And even amongst those who are, you know, confessionally Reformed, this is one of those words that I would assume a lot of people that are even serious about their Reformed theology probably have never heard. If they have heard the terms, they probably haven't taken the time to clearly define where they fall on this spectrum. And so it's kind of an odd thing. I don't know that I've ever heard a radio program devoted to lapsus.
Well, right.
You're involved in one right now.
Right.
Here we are. Yeah.
You know, and it's predestined, for those that have never heard of it, which is probably most of you, it's one of those things where it is not pertaining to the gospel. You know, obviously the most important thing is the gospel and, salvation, but this is just something fun for, Calvinist to bicker back and forth about.
Right. Well, and see, this is where you get into the... I have such a hard time with the first-tier issues, second-tier issues, third-tier issue, all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like, I get that, you know, you don't have to have a view of, you know, God's logical ordering of decrees in order to enter into heaven. But I also don't want to, like, just say, well, we're going to have this conversation, but it doesn't really matter. Because it does matter. Because we're talking about the nature and the interaction of God. So.
Well, you're going to, if you're a Calvinist, because you're going to talk about it, you're going to believe the sequence, one of these sequences.
Correct.
You're going to believe Correct. One of these.
Yeah.
So, so for someone, you know, and we've heard them, our Reformed, you know, Calvinistic Reformed brothers even say, well, I don't believe in any Lapsarian view. Which yeah. that's
kind of like saying I'm not a Calvinist or an Arminian. Already, I'm a
right.
biblicist.
I'm a biblicist. Yeah, you fall into one of those two camps, go. Whether
pretty
you
much,
believe it or not.
Pretty much, those are the ones that haven't really given it a lot of thought, and they haven't studied the back and forth.
Right.
A bit.
So it's basically from a predestination view. Lapsarianism, as Brandon said, it's one of these views is based on the order of how things flow.
Yeah.
And your view as a Reformed Calvinistic brother, if you are one of those, brother or sister, will fall into one of these. So let's talk about them. Let's talk about these orders and how God has determined things and how they're going to happen. Mm-hmm. This really, again, piggybacking off to what we talked about previously when we were talking about predestination, single and double and positive, and all, I mean, all of those things that we talked about. If you didn't hear that, go back, find us on Sermon Audio. You'll be able to hear that when you hear us talk about predestination. So let's just kind of go into these, and let's talk about the one that's the most prevalent, I would say, in the Reformed camp, and it would be the infralapsarianism view.
Yeah.
I would say that is the most prevalent.
It's always been the majority position. And before we get into the two different distinctions, just let me throw a little blurb out there about, just define what we're talking about in general. So this discussion concerns the natural order of God's decrees.
Right.
So a decree is God determining something to happen. It's more than just a command. Because a command can be rejected. But whenever the Bible talks about God's decrees and whenever we systematically break the commands of God up into decrees, these are things that are going to come to pass. So, for instance, God says, "Let there be light." That was a decree spoken by the despotate, and so it was. It happened. So this concerns the logical ordering of God's decrees. Now, that's different than talking about the temporal order of God's decrees. So in both of these positions, we're not saying, well, first God did this, and then God did that, and then God did this. God decrees one thing, then he decrees another thing, then he decrees another thing. That would be the temporal ordering of kind of a timeline flow, but that's not what this conversation is about. This conversation is about the logical order of God's decrees. So inside of the mind of God, inside of the heart of a holy God, what is it that causes what? So it's kind of the which came first, the chicken or the egg type thing in regards to election predestination. And there again, this is all corresponding to what happens before or after the fall of man. This is all about God's right. interaction with the fall.
Right, before, after, what have you. And infralapsarianism, after the lapse.
Yeah.
So it's basically that's how you break infra. It's a big word. It's kind of like medicine when we deal with these Latin terms. You know, if I say something that's crazy, if I say dysphagia, somebody says, "Oh my goodness, that's another language." Yes, it is. It's Latin, but it just means that you have difficulty swallowing. So it's really just this is the same type of ordeal after the lapse, infra after the lapse, lapsarianism, the belief of this. So what does this say? This is the most popular view of the lapsarians amongst the Reformed camp. Mm-hmm. And here's the order, and correct me if I'm wrong on this order. So this order, the infralapsarianism, the most popular in the Calvinistic Reformed doctrine, believes this, that number one, that God decreed, as Brandon just said, the creation of mankind. Okay. That's number one. He did that first. Number two, God decreed mankind would be allowed to fall into sin through their own self-determination. That was the Adam and Eve. Number
right.
three, God decreed to save some of the fallen. And then number four, God decreed to provide Jesus Christ as the Redeemer. So infralapsarianism after the fall, this is where the focus is on God allowing the fall and providing salvation. With the infra, this is again the most popular Reformed view. Mm-hmm. So what would these other views, the sublapsarian and the superlapsarian, what is the ill that they have with this view? What is their problem with this particular order?
So there again, just to reiterate, because I know you're listening to this in audio form and you're probably Googling trying to get something to look at if you're a visual learner right now too. But
and don't just, do it while you're driving.
Right. Just to reiterate here, we're talking about the logical order of what God does. So in the decree, and God, I mean, if you're a Calvinist, you agree that God decrees election, God decrees reprobation. Okay, so this is where you go back to that predestination, you know, conversation as to how involved God is in the reprobation and the perdition of the fallen ones. But that's what we're talking about. And so this word infra, I mean, you guys were talking about after. The prefix infra actually means under.
Under, it does.
So it means under the fall.
It does.
So after the fall has taken place. So God ordains the creation, God ordains the fall, and then after God ordains the fall for the purpose of magnifying his glory on earth through salvation, then he, of his own choosing, decides to set his affection upon some individuals. And so you have God, after decreeing the fall, decreeing to save some out of those fallen individuals. And so those would be, you know, the people that he sets his affection upon, those would be the elect, the predestined, the called. And so in infralapsarianism, reprobation is a passive thing.
Mm-hmm.
So this would be the single predestination view. This would be the positive negative view. So infralapsarianism is saying that reprobation is something that comes after God's determination for the fall to take place. It's passive rather than active. God is choosing to leave the non-elect in their sin, but he does not actively harden their hearts against sin. So that is the infralapsarian position. And it is the popular position. It's always been the popular position. Arguably, it's the position of John Calvin himself. Most people would see John Calvin as being infralapsarianist. So the superlapsarian comes along and says, nope, going to take issue with that. I don't actually believe that.
Mm-hmm.
And so the prefix supra means over. So over the fall, before the fall takes place. So here's what that means for them.
Or some would say anti as well. Anti-lapsarianism. Which, before.
Right. They would be in the minority of even wording it that way, I would say. But, you know, what that's saying, superlapsarianism says that the decree of election and reprobation occurs before the fall of man. So before God decrees that mankind is going to fall, there again, they're making their decision to fall. Neither one of these views places the blame for sin upon the head of God. I think that's important throughout, too. But superlapsarianism is going to say that the decree of election and reprobation, so those who are predestined unto salvation and those who are predestined to perdition, that predestining act takes place before God logically orders the fall taking place. And so that's sometimes, I you know, the term anti that you threw out, that's new to me, but
anti.
Right. A lot of the times what this is referred to in the conversations, if it's not a lapsarian-based conversation, people are going to call this high Calvinism versus low Calvinism. So infralapsarianism would be a low Calvinist or a moderate Calvinist position. Superlapsarian would be the high Calvinism position, and sometimes it's twisted to justify hyper-Calvinism, which both of these positions should deny. But not all that are supralapsarian are hyperlapsarian. Not all who are superlapsarian are hyper-Calvinist. And I can say that from experience, because in this lapsarian conversation, I am in the minority position of being superlapsarian. And I would not consider myself a hyper-Calvinist, and I hope that you guys wouldn't consider me that either. But here it is in a purpose statement. So God, desiring to demonstrate his mercy and his wrath, so God making a decision to demonstrate his mercy and his wrath through the act of election and reprobation, He decrees the fall so that he can demonstrate both his mercy and his wrath through both of those actions. So infralapsarianism says that God predetermines that the fall is going to happen, and then he determines to save some out of that fall. The superlapsarian position, the high Calvinism position, is going to say God has determined to set his affection on some and to pass over others, and his decision to predestine some and his decision to make some as reprobate, those vessels for honorable and dishonorable use, as Romans chapter 9 talks about, God determines to do that and then brings the fall about to accomplish that end. Rather than bringing the fall about and then doing something with mankind to accomplish that end, that God's glory in both salvation and retribution was his intention from the very beginning. And so the fall, although God is not responsible for the sin that brings the fall about, God ordains the fall so that he might be magnified in salvation and damnation.
Yeah. So these are positions that further would tell someone where your stance of predestination
sure,
is.
Absolutely.
Right. And again, you're only going to have this discussion
with
a Calvinist view of a predestination view. If you're an Arminian, if you're a free will believer, believing that like
you had a choice,
it's all up to you. Then none of these are going to come into play.
And here's, we can throw some scriptures in here too, which we haven't done yet. But the infralapsarian position, in my view. Okay, I know the infralapsarian position is the most popular view. I would assume probably both of you guys, if not one of you guys, I don't know, are in the infralapsarian position. But my problem with it is it makes God seem reactionary to sin, that sin is in the mind of God, that this is going to happen, and so he does the best that he can in choosing some and not choosing others. Whereas the superlapsarian position doesn't make God reacting to anything. In fact, that the sin coming into the world, he intends for good. And so the superlapsarian position, when it comes to reprobation and those that will end up in God's judgment, that's not a response to their sin. It's not in view of their sin. You know, that God is not reacting to the sin of man and then electing to save some. But God has elected some and brings sin into the world before, you know, with Jacob and Esau, before they had done anything good or bad. He's determined these things beforehand for his glory, both in Jacob and Esau. He determined to glorify himself through both of their lives in different ways before they had done anything good or bad.
Two different vessels.
Correct.
So that being said, so again, as you're listening to this, it's easy to be confused by just the terminology itself.
Right.
Sure.
The terminology itself just is easy to be confused. But understand that these come from, these come from Latin. Come from, these didn't just begin yesterday, did they?
Yeah. And again, let me go back to the beginning too. No, it didn't just begin yesterday. And the Latin phrases kind of tell you how old this conversation is.
And that's my point. That's my point. That's my point.
It's been going on for a long time. But just to go back to the beginning, remember, when I say that God did this and then he did that, I'm not talking about in a timeline. I'm not saying that
right,
first.
Right, and a lot of people have a problem with that.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I'm not saying that first God determined this and then that. I'm talking about the logical orderings of what brought about what, theologically speaking.
Now, for both of you, wouldn't you say that sublapsarian is like the least held position, or do you think that's kind of just a byproduct of infra?
There's actually two. It's a byproduct of infra. I mean, there are some people that differentiate infralapsarianism from sublapsarianism, and the only difference between those two is going back to this order thing, yeah. you're not saying that you're thinking on, but the sublapsarian and the infra do, and the difference would be whether God first decreed to provide salvation through Jesus Christ and then chose some to be saved or vice versa. So that's the difference between sublapsarianism
and infra. It has to do with the timing of the pacto salutis.
Right.
The pact of salvation.
Right.
When it was that God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit determined to save.
So they see this 1, 2, 3, 4, this different order, and
correct,
then it happened in this way. And what you're saying is you say, well, I believe in superlapsarianism, but I'm not saying that these things just simply occurred in this form and fashion.
And the reason for that is because of the eternality of God. Because God exists outside of time, the pacto salutis, the pact of salvation, when God determined to save, that takes place outside of time. And so without a timeline, fitting God's logical order of decrees into a timeline that exists in any other plane except for logical thinking is impossible. And so that's my problem with the timeline stuff, you know. But
And the reason being, so let's talk about this as well. So the reason being that the infralapsarianism position is the most popular is because we go back to our predestination debate, talking about the positive negative and the positive positive.
Right.
The infralapsarian believer would say, well, God did do all these things prior to, and those whom he did not choose to save, he just, what do we say? He just let them go.
Right.
And then again, their argument to the supralapsarian, and you did a good job with explaining that you don't believe that it's a hyper Calvinism type,
sure.
of, but it is so easy.
Oh yeah,
it's
oh,
so
yeah.
easy to
oh,
say.
Yeah.
Well, that's
well,
what
that
you're
was,
saying.
You know, interestingly enough, that was Calvin's problem with supralapsarianism. Is, you know, everybody assumes that John Calvin was a hyper-Calvinist, but the funny thing is John Calvin was the one who was openly fighting against the hyper-Calvinist.
Right.
So, for instance, you've got Calvin. Calvin takes the infralapsarian position and sees God as really passive when it comes to the reprobation of individuals, reprobation of those who are, you know, sons of perdition, such as Judas.
Mm-hmm.
There again, I'm going to throw Judas out
sure.
here and say, well, what, I mean, When did God determine for those things to take place in Judas?
Logical like, argument.
Right.
Yeah.
But anyway, Calvin takes that position, but Theodore Beza, who was Calvin's predecessor, or successor, Theodore Beza takes the supralapsarian position. And so you got both of these guys that debated with each other at the same time,
mm-hmm.
Taking those two different positions on that. But their, you know, schism between those two guys really didn't manifest itself in their preaching. Theodore Beza and John Calvin both preached the exact same thing,
mm-hmm.
But there was a different logical ordering going on inside of their mind. You know, in the same way, whenever I preach the gospel and Dr. Luke preaches the gospel, mm-hmm. although we may have a different term that we attach to predestination, it's going to sound the exact same, which is... Yeah.
It is going,
words mean things.
They do mean things, and you're probably not going to, and you really probably shouldn't have a Sunday morning sermon on supralapsarianism and infralapsarianism. This should be probably be done in a small group or in a Bible
yeah.
class or
yeah.
what have you. Because just like Brandon said, if it's him preaching or I'm preaching or you're preaching, Matt, it is all going to sound the same because we're going to, and we say this all the time. We preach like we're Arminians
oh, yeah.
because
yeah.
we're calling people to sell, you know, we're telling people to do something.
What's interesting is it seems like the more you study, the more you wrestle with this.
When yes.
you're, especially when you're preaching through the doctrine of election predestination,
yep.
you have to struggle with these questions yourself, which is so cool because you read Spurgeon's sermons.
Yeah.
You read Spurgeon's sermons as a 21-year-old. And Spurgeon was a staunch supralapsarian.
Yeah.
You read Spurgeon's sermons as a 35-year-old, he's an infralapsarianism.
Yeah.
But you read Spurgeon's sermons right before he died, he flip-flopped again. He was working through this whole thing. And so throughout history, it's been interesting. And there again, it's an in-house debate amongst those who are confessionally reformed even. Because, you know, on one hand, supralapsarianism, you've got guys like Theodore Beza, you've got Abraham Kuyper, you've got John Flavel, these guys. On the other hand, you know, with infralapsarianism, you've got John Calvin, who is wrongly credited with, you know, creating this whole debate, which
right.
he didn't. Then you've got guys like John Frame. Then you have the Westminster Divine. So you take the 1689 London Baptist Confession, you take the 1646 Westminster Confession.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those intentionally are very ambiguous when it comes to this. And the reason for that is because amongst the Westminster Council, the Westminster Divines, it was pretty much split right down the middle as to half of these guys were in for a half.
So they kind of avoided that.
Right. Well, because they both agreed on the doctrinal heart of what they were communicating.
Right.
But they arrived at it a different
right.
way.
And they understood that it wasn't a reason to separate themselves from other. But now, there's a small minority of people that will separate themselves.
The hyper-Calvinists.
Yes.
Right. I mean, well, and you're seeing a lot of that today with just a rise, not really just of high Calvinism, but of high-handed Calvinism. And there's
yeah.
a difference.
Right.
And so there's a large growing population.
Did you just create a new term?
Yeah.
Okay.
But there's a large growing population of guys like, I mean, I would throw some names out, like Theodore Zacharides. Okay. great apologist, mm-hmm. and I love to hear him preach, but in his apologetics positions, mm-hmm. he is going to say that if you are not super lapsarian, then it's not just that you're not reformed, you're not even saved.
Right.
Right. And so that's
so he's going to die on that hill?
They do. Yeah, well, they debate on it.
Absolutely. And you know, look, on one hand, I give the guy credit for sticking with what he believes. Yeah. On the other hand, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But you know what? You learn so much as you, like you said, as you study. I mean, if Spurgeon changed and then changed back, I mean, yeah. you see different things. You understand things differently sometimes.
The quote that comes to mind is there was a conversation that came up that Martin Luther was involved in. And it didn't have to do directly with this conversation, but I think the wisdom kind of applies. And he asked Luther, he said, you know, what was God doing before the foundation of the world? And Luther's response was, God was busy predestining hell for silly theologians that ask such stupid questions. you know, and so.
And again, these discussions on these lapsarian views really are,
they're speculative.
They're speculative, and it's the theologians that really like to talk about it. And we're talking about it because we have a radio show, yeah. and we talk about theology here, and we talk about these types of things.
It's fun, though, because it really does have to do with how it is that God accomplishes bringing about the most glory for himself. Like, we believe what the book of Ephesians teaches, that God has ordered salvation in such a way that no man can boast. And so, you know, for me, in my position, I feel like super lapsarian, that logical ordering of God's decrees allots God the maximum amount of glory because it doesn't make him react to anything. And adding into this conversation, I'm afraid that infralapsarianism, in my view, as I understand it, infralapsarianism goes really, really close to towing the line of denying the impassibility of God, because it does insert a lot of God's feelings about sin and the fall of man into the conversation. So I'm not saying that they're heretical or anything like that, but because of the immutability of God, because of the impassibility of God, because of the holiness of God, I believe that the superlapsarian position allots him the maximum amount of glory. So I'm
right.
gonna stick
well,
with it.
And God is omnipotent.
Sure.
God is omniscient. And there's another omni that God is.
He's just omni.
He's present.
Yeah. Well, but the thing is, I mean, you know, when you look at that, I mean, tying into all of this, God, all of his attributes are eternal. And so
right.
in talking about what caused what, you have to factor in all of the attributes of God in order to arrive at that conclusion.
Right.
So doing so has brought me to where I am.
And in the end, we're all going to preach that you should turn from your sins, repent, and trust yep. Jesus Christ.
And if you right. did, God decreed that.
Absolutely.
Before the foundation
absolutely.
Of the world.
We have no, yeah. And it all Calvinists should do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Glorify God.
And glorify God to preach his gospel to
forever.
The end of the earth. So we hope we didn't confuse you too much. I confused me. I think Brandon confused me. But we hope we didn't confuse you too much. But again, the superlapsarianism and infralapsarianism views are those amongst the Calvinistic doctrines or Calvinistic believers, and you can Google that and search it and learn a little bit
have
more about yourself. Have fun
with it
as yourself. Go back and listen to this. You can pick this show back up on Sermon Audio, and it'll be super lapsarianism. I don't know how Justin's going to title this, one of the lapsarians. But that is all the time we have for today's show. As always, you can like us on Facebook. You can like Grace Life Radio. You can follow us on Twitter, myself, Dr. Luke 23, Brandon at Live in Grace. And that's the Twitter. And then you can also like Dr. Luke Theology Talk on Facebook as well. You can write us at Grace Life Radio or at Word for America, all one word, at gmail.com. And as always, we ask that you be like those Bereans in Acts chapter 17, verse 11, to search the scriptures daily to know that what you're hearing and seeing is of the Lord.